Actress Mariette Hartley joins us from California. Hello, Mariette, how are you?
Hello, do I have to yell?
No, not at all.
Well, we're talking very far apart.
Yes, we are.
How are you? What's the weather like there?
It's very, very nice. Currently, it's 17 degrees. That's Celsius.
Yeah.
63 degrees, which is not too bad. And we're going to get a nice warm day tomorrow. So we're going to return to summer.
I hope we get a cool day tomorrow.
Why is that? What is it like there?
Actually, it's quite cool today. It's really lovely, but you know, California gets pretty darn hot. So anyway, and I'm a Connecticut kid at heart. So it's like, oh, give me cool, give me rain. I want rain.
There's so much to talk to you about. We should mention the phone numbers again, 7900991 Star Talk, 1-800-491-CJD. You've done film, you've done television, you do stage. You also have an issue that we want to discuss a little later on that's very near and dear to your heart that you're involved in, and it's also a problem here in Quebec, which I'll talk about a little later, and that is suicide prevention, correct?
Mm, yeah.
Let's go back a little ways in your career. Actually, you know, I want to go back to, was it 1973? I have to explain this, Mariette.
Okay.
I was 14.
You were what?
I was 14.
Oh, I don't want to hear this.
And you had two navels.
Oh, my God. This is so funny because I just came from a convention. I've never done these things before. This is like a Twilight Zone convention. And some guy came up to me and said, you know, I got negatives of Genesis 2. You with two navels. And I said, no kidding. Get them to me so that I can, if I ever go to another, you know, science fiction convention, I can sell a couple of them. You know, it's so funny that your whole life just, oh, it's amazing to me. It's just amazing to me. Yeah, I played a mutant, Amazon. An Amazon mutant. I've always felt that way most of my life anyway, so.
This was on Genesis 2, which was done by Gene Roddenberry back in 73 for CBS.
Right.
And I understand the reason behind the two navels was the fact that he was not allowed to have any navels on Star Trek on NBC.
Oh, really? So this was his payback?
Yeah, so he made up for it with you and some of the other characters on that show.
Well, it's funny because I think she is a mutant, right? She came from, I guess, a mother with two navels, or I don't know what the hell it was. I'd have to see it again in order to remember, and I choose not to. So,
with all the things you've done in television and film, I've seen you go from drama to comedy very easily. Do you have a preference?
Oh, God. Wow, that's a tough one, because one of the things that I've always believed is that within drama there's always comedy, and within comedy, if you're not playing the reality of it, it doesn't work. So I guess the common ground there is kind of reality and authenticity, and not asking or begging for a laugh no matter what. You know what I'm saying? I happen to love comedy. I love comedy. I always have, but I find it extremely, extremely difficult to kind of get used to doing once you get hooked on the laughs. I had a wonderful teacher, actually, Bert Lahr. I was on tour with A Midsummer Night's Dream when I was about 19 or 20. I can't remember how old I was. And he was playing Bottom, and I was playing Helena in A Midsummer Night's Dream. And I came off stage one night, and I said, they didn't laugh, Bert. How come they didn't laugh? And he said, you really want to know, kid? And I said, yeah. That's why I asked you. He said, because you wanted them to, kid. And I thought, oh, my God. And it had stayed with me, and I teach a little bit now. And I tell you, begging for a laugh, it doesn't work. You just have to play the reality. You have to play the seriousness of an issue. And if people happen to find it funny, then you're in great shape. I just finished doing Enchanted April, and it was a delightful, wonderful part. And she was ultimately extremely comedic, but trying to find her reality so that I wasn't playing at the comedy, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
I find that difficult. With drama, it's a bit easier. I just, you know, when I did, the only thing that's sometimes difficult with drama is when you're doing a part like Copenhagen, you know, Margrethe in Copenhagen, I tried to infuse comedy in her. And then it was kind of a European dry wit. And so I tried to always kind of ride the line. Aren't you sorry you asked me this question?
No, not at all.
I knew it was going to be so long-winded.
Not at all.
But I really try. I mean, when I did Mothers Against Drunk Drivers, or when I did Silence of the Heart, or when I did, you know, I do the kind of melodramas on screen, I really, really try to come in from the side pocket at one or two times, you know, to really round out the person so that people can get hooked into liking them, do you know?
Right.
But I feel you're not affected unless you're hooked into them somehow.
Well, since you seem to have a very broad spectrum of the type of things you've done in your career, have you had to fight against typecasting, people wanting to put you into or pigeonhole you in a certain area because you had a certain acclaim for a particular type of role?
Well, yeah, I mean, that started when I was 10, and I played nothing but men. You know, because
okay.
I was this tall when I was born. I'm 5'9". So, you know, I always played guys. I played, you know, my first claim to fame was the King of the Fairies in A Midsummer Night's Dream. So, you know, I mean, I always played guys. Then I ended up playing wicked fairies, right? Then I went from that to, of course, Peckinpah's wonderful movie, you know, Ride the High Country. And from that, I started doing television. And I ended up doing frigid doctors. That was kind of fun. That was when I did Peyton Place. And I went from frigid doctors to frigid girlfriends to frigid school teachers. You know, Hollywood.
Did you get a lot of dates during that time?
No, you mean in real life?
Yeah.
No, I wasn't really interested. I was working so bloody hard that it didn't matter. It's very odd. Hollywood has a tendency to do. Then I did Grieving Mothers, you know. I mean, the great thing about the Polaroid commercials, first of all, that was something that I never wanted to do. You know, I resisted commercials for years. You know, and we learn the things that we learn the most from the things we resist the most, you know. That was when people began saying, Oh, I see, she has another side. She can do comedy. That kind of shifted things. But, yeah, I've been typecast all of my life. And then on the other side, I do so many things that people don't know they don't know how to cast me.
Hmm.
It's been a very kind of frustrating, funny career.
We're talking with actress Mariette Hartley here on Montreal's News Talk Leader CJD 800. You just mentioned the Polaroid commercials, which so many people seemed to really fall in love with and actually thought for, I guess, a period of time that you were actually Mrs. James Garner.
They still do.
They still do?
Oh, yeah. People come up to me and say, no, you're not really, right? Are you? It's like, I'll never, ever, ever live that down, ever. So, we did them for 7 years. I mean, we did 250 commercials.
How did you go from not wanting it to doing the commercial? And what did you think of the reaction to them?
Well, that's a two-part question.
Right.
The first part is money. You know, I mean, the commercials in those days could make people a great deal of money, and I was starving. And it's interesting that you resist things until you starve. and then you realize, well, gee, maybe if I go up for a couple of commercials, I don't want to be rejected. I don't want that. I don't want to bring five or six or seven different changes in the back of my car. You know, you've got your Mary Tyler Moore change, you've got your Candace Bergen change, you've got your Housewife change, you've got your. It was just, and I started working. I started really making money, and I did close to 150 commercials before I got the Polaroid commercials. And I bucked at doing the Polaroid commercials because I thought it was going to be scale, and I didn't want to do any more scale commercials. And my wonderful agent and manager said, no, you go on this interview. And it was magical. It just turned out to be an extraordinary experience.
Now, were you aware of the fact that you would have been paired with James Garner at the time?
I knew it was going to be Jimmy. I mean, obviously, I knew that. I mean, because he had been doing them for 10 years, for a year. He had been doing them for a year.
Right.
The campaign apparently was not hugely successful, and they felt that he needed someone to spar with. And they were thinking of two other people, actually. They were thinking about Joan Hackett. I don't know if you remember Joan.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, who's married to Richard, was married to Richard Mulligan. They're both gone now.
Mm-hmm.
Almighty. and me. But I went up there, and Morgan Brittany was up there, for God's sake, and she's the most gorgeous-looking creature you've ever seen, with, you know, black hair down to her ass and these great big blue eyes. And I thought, oh, that's it. You know, I'm this little kid from Connecticut who's too tall, short hair, and that's it. It's over. And then I started improvising I started improvising on camera or something. I can't remember what happened. And the men who saw it, with whom I had fallen in love afterwards, were Bob Cage and Bob Gage and Jack Dylan. They were the heads of Doyle Dane, and they were the brains and the brilliance behind the whole campaign. It wasn't a campaign then. I was just a day player.
Right.
And after about six of them, I thought, wait a minute, this is smelling like a campaign. And I started negotiating, and Jimmy was very supportive of that, up to a point. It was like, okay, but you can't make any more than me, you know, and which was fine. And we became this astonishingly successful couple. And I mean, you could have blown me out of the water. I had no idea it was going to happen like that. None.
With the success of the Polaroid commercials, did anybody try to hook you up working-wise with James Garner in something else?
Oh, I did, actually. A friend of mine, my best friend, who wrote my book with me, had a wonderful script, and I very much tried to have it work, but somehow it didn't. To this day, I don't quite know what happened, but it didn't work.
Are you referring to the book Breaking the Silence?
Yeah, that book, yeah. Annie Comeyer, and she had written a wonderful script called Haywards, which was about two store detectives, and it was perfect for the two of us, and Jimmy loved it. But somehow it just didn't work. I would have loved to have, because I really felt on some level, and I say this without ego, that we came as close to Hepburn and Tracy as
Hepburn and Tracy.
I mean, I really felt, and I know that he paired with an awful lot of wonderful actresses, but there was something very special about our relationship.
Now that you put it that way, there is a certain quality there, maybe even in Nick and Nora. There was a great chemistry between the two of you.
Oh, God, Nick and Nora. Well, Myrna Loy and William Powell. I mean, those two were just astonishing together. I would have loved to have gone on further with him, but I don't know. Jimmy's a funny guy. I think he felt that, I don't know, enough is enough or something. I really don't know. He's not a talker, so I can't sit and talk to him about it. Or I think one time he said, why don't we do it when we, you know, really surprise people? And I said, like when you're 93 and I'm 80? I mean, what the hell? Why are we waiting? You know, anyway, who knows?
We're talking with Marriott Hartley here on Montreal's News Talk Leader CJD, 800-790-0991, Star Talk, and 1-800-491-CJD. Those are the numbers to call.
Now, more of Holder Tonight with Peter Anthony Holder on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJAD 800. To speak to Peter, call 790-0991, Star Talk, or 1-800-491-CJAD.
Peter Anthony Holder here with you on Montreal's News Talk Leader CJD 800. We are talking with actress Marriott Hartley. She is also the author of a book that she wrote and published on a biography called Breaking the Silence. 7900991 Star Talk, 1-800-491-CJD. Those are the numbers to call. And before, Marriott, I asked you if you had a preference between comedy and drama. With all the things you do, do you have a preference between stage, television, or theater, or film, rather?
Gosh, that's a really tough one. I happen to love theater. I mean, I was, you know, I was born and bred in the theater. In Connecticut, there was a wonderful children's theater called Silver Nutmeg Theater, and I was in it from the time I was 10 to the time I was 14, and then I studied with an amazing woman named Eva Le Gallien, who, you know, was a fabulous teacher and taught Ibsen, Chekhov, and Shakespeare, and then I went from her hands to John Houseman's hands. So I've had fabulous kind of golden mentors.
It's quite a, I was going to say, quite a pedigree there.
Yeah, it really was an amazing pedigree for an American actor. I mean, you know, it was all about repertory, and not many people have been lucky enough to have that kind of history. I just finished reading a book that I absolutely adore called Hamlet's Dresser. I don't know if you know of it, by Robert Smith. And Bob and I were at the Shakespeare Festival together in Connecticut, and it was an amazing place. I mean, John Houseman had really, really knew how to create spaces for actors to work and to support actors, and it was an amazing upbringing as a kid. My heart really is in the theater, which is a good thing, because you get to be my age, and if you're not, you know, a huge major star, there's not, you know, the work is few and far between at times. You know, I mean, I'm lucky enough to be doing Special Victims Unit now. You know, I'm hoping that it's a kind of a running character. I've done a couple of them now, and I love it. But you just never know. So for the last 10 years, basically, I've been touring. I've been either in New York doing shows like Sylvia or Cabaret. I just came back from doing Cabaret at Studio 54, Ancestral Voices at the Center at Lincoln Center. So I and Copenhagen, major national tour, Sisters Rosenzweig, all those. And literally for the last 10 years, and I'm praying that I'll be able to stay home now. Oh. Because it gets kind of tiring to tour by yourself.
We're talking with Mariette Hartley here on Montreal's News Talk Leader CJD, 800-790-0991, Star Talk 1-800-491-CJD. Those are the numbers. John in Point St. Charles, hi, you're on CJD.
Hi. I'd like to ask Miss Hartley, whatever happened to that movie? She mentioned it before. It was a wonderful Western, and it never came out again, Ride the High Country.
Oh, gosh, thank you so much. You know what?
Excuse me for interrupting. It was Randolph Scott and Joel McRae, right?
It sure was. Oh, God, it was so glorious, and it's become a classic.
Yes, I know that.
Yeah, it was called, it's interesting, when it was released, it was called Guns in the Afternoon.
Yes.
And because it was about two old gun toters.
Yes,
you know,
I know.
And they came out...
I'm a fan of Westerns.
What? They came out of retirement. Both Joel and Randy came out of retirement to do it.
I realize that. You don't know whatever happened to it, eh?
I know it's on DVD. It's on DVD. It's on tape, and it's a very big seller.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I just wanted to know because I heard you mention. I said that was one movie I really, really enjoyed.
Oh, thank you so much. I love it. I love watching it too. It's so much fun.
Thank you, dear.
Thank you very much. John, take care. Bye-bye. 790-0991 Star Talk, 1-800-491-CJD. Those are the numbers to call. You mentioned that you had been acting ever since you were a little girl. Was there ever another option for you, or did you always want to be an actress? No ifs, ands, or buts.
Oh, wow. You know, people say, well, you chose to be an actress. Well, you know, I really think it's something that you're born with, and I think it's almost like being, you know, it's in your genes, and it's like being gay sometimes. It's like, oh, so hard. It's so hard. And you really at times don't have a choice, you know. There was only one time I kind of had a choice, and that was when I didn't have much money, and I was standing on the street corner opposite I Magnum's, which is, I don't know what it would be equivalent to in Canada. What are some of the big department stores there? I should know that.
Like,
I've worked there for
like the Bay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm standing looking at it and thought, you know, I don't have any money, and I don't know how to call people to tell them I'm out of work and I want work. So I walked across the street, and I got a job as a saleswoman. This was after Ride the High Country. This was after much of the major television, early television that I had done, and the old stuff, like, you know, the Bonanzas and Peyton Place and Gunsmokes and all that. So this was in 1966, 67. And I got a job. I got a great job. Of course, people were coming up to me and saying, oh, poor dear. And I said, poor dear, I'm so grateful to be working at all. But what I found out was that I could do something else, because I think there was a part of me that felt that I was, you know, I couldn't do anything else. and I found out that I could. I could sell a lot of clothes in a day, and it felt terrific. And then I joined a little theater group, and then I continued my work. And then from that point on, you know, that led me to the Polaroid commercials. But yeah, so I did take a turn in the road, and now my life is so full of so many other things besides acting. But that's still basically how I, you know, I'm self-supporting through my own contributions, and that's basically how. You know, it's been a very, very generous, and I've been very, very lucky.
We are talking with actress Mariette Hartley here on Montreal's News Talk Leader CJD 800. We have another half hour to go with Mariette. The number's to call. If you have a question or comment, 7900991 star talk 1-800-491-CJD. This is Montreal's News Talk Leader CJD 800.
Now, more of Holder Tonight with Peter Anthony Holder on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJAD 800. To speak to Peter, call 790-0991, Star Talk, or 1-800-491-CJAD.
Peter Anthony Holder here with you on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJAD 800. We are talking with actress Mariette Hartley here on CJAD. 7900991 star talk and 1-800-491-CJAD. Those are the numbers to call. Well, we've covered television and film and theater and your preferences there. I want to talk about one issue, one thing you did on TV that wasn't acting. The morning program on CBS.
Oh, you don't know how much acting that was, Peter. Give me a break.
I
acted awake, for God's sake.
Did Goodnight Beantown help at all in that?
No, I did Goodnight Beantown after that, I think, didn't I? Or did I? You know, I never know.
You did it before, actually.
I did it before. You're absolutely right. No, I did. I did the morning program in 87,
mm-hmm.
And it wasn't acting, but there were parts of it that I found, as I'm sure you find, you know, some of the interviews, and if people are giving, you know, if people really, you know, kind of know how to talk and stuff like that, but if you have somebody that doesn't talk, I don't know if you've experienced this, it gets to be a little bit sticky, especially when, you know, millions of people are watching you at 7:30 in the morning.
But it's not only those millions of people. You had a live audience there for a while.
Well, I don't know how live they were. I kind of pulled them off the street. Most of them were just there for the meal. But, you know, it was an incredible experience. I'm just so grateful that I did it I learned so much, and Roland Smith was a gem of a guy. I think he was slightly overwhelmed by me, as I was by me. I mean, because I never knew what was going to come out of my mouth, and I never knew what interviews really I was going to have, even though I tried to do as much research as I could. It was all up for grabs when we finally, got on television, you know, that morning. And it was really trying to be an experimental show. I mean, I think in some level it was way ahead of its time.
One of the problems I had with it is that I actually enjoyed the show and also some of the shows that followed it on CBS, but CBS just can't seem to win in that time slot. Well, even when they do good work, no one seems to follow it.
Well, I think one of the things, who knows what it is, but they were experimental. I mean, we were actually touching people before even people now touch people. You know, I mean, you see Diane Sawyer, who actually does a picture with Charlie with her arms around his neck. Now, that never would have happened, you know, in 1987. Everybody was very stiff and very demure, and we weren't. I mean, I was completely irreverent, which was very embarrassing to CBS. So I think they didn't know how to take it, and Bill Paley was the head of CBS at that point, and I don't know, I loved doing parts of it, and I knew what the show was. I mean, the show was a different guest star every week. Like, we had George Segal, we had that crazy, wonderful comedian who did Golden Girls, and
Betty White,
and they would come on for a week. And I went up to Tom, who was the head guy. I said, "That's the show. That's the show. Please give me that show." And they couldn't do it. I mean, obviously, they had. I'm sure they had a contract with Roland, and Roland certainly would have been there, and I would have been there. But it was wonderful to have these people as crazy hosts. But it was, it was too comedic at that point in the morning. They didn't feel that anybody wanted to laugh, and I don't find that's true. I watch people listening to radio or watching radio on the freeway, and they're laughing like hell, driving down the freeway. So. I don't know, we missed somehow, and I don't think they do enough publicity, frankly. I really don't. CBS does not. They don't know how to do it for that early morning show. And it's a slot that attracts a few people. Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, they're
right.
Battling for very few numbers at that point of the morning. So anyway, but it was a great experience.
Is there anything you haven't done that you want to do? As an actress?
Wow. I don't know. I've pretty much done it all, and more than most. I mean, my concentration is not on acting so much anymore, although I would still love to do a major film. I've never really done a major film. I've done films, and many of them end up on airplanes. but I just finished doing an independent film, which I really enjoyed doing, called Farewell to Raskolnikov, and that's with Tracy Lord. I mean, who knows what that's going to end up being, but and that's what we all do now, are independent films that end up in festivals and on. I have never had a major film career. I've had a fairly major television career. I would love to do a first-run Broadway show. That I would love to do. I've never done that. I've gone in to replace, I mean, I came in the sixth year of Cabaret, which was great, and it was very exciting. But I would love to create a character on Broadway or create a character in New York. I think that would be so exciting. And I would love to do a major film now. I mean, it that would be wonderful.
Well, how different has your career been from... the dreams or visions you had of what your career would be when you were a 10-year-old?
Oh, that's such a sweet question. I can only say that compared to my life. As I was sitting in, the Fine Arts Theater watching The Red Shoes or one of Ingrid Bergman's films or whatever, all I wanted to be was Maura Shearer or Ingrid Bergman. That was all I wanted to be. And my limited view of my life at that point was so extremely limited compared to what it's become. And that very little of that has to do with acting. That has to do with my life, which took, as you know, I mean, many excruciatingly painful turns, and turns that I didn't think I would ever get through. And as a result of actually living through those events, a step at a time and seven steps back and two steps forward and, trying to crawl my way through those things, they have become astonishing gifts for me. And, my life today is mystical. Now, I never expected that I would have a mystical life. that was not something that I anticipated. My life is huge today compared to my kind of limited acting dream. Do you know what I'm saying?
I understand, yeah.
Yeah, of course you do, because you're doing wonderful work there. And all of that was based on tragedy, based on what seemed or what appeared to be or what I perceived as tragedy at the time. And it was. It was very real. And it really wasn't, and this is the interesting thing about my life, is that when I did, I'm not going to get mysterious about it. My father committed suicide in 1963.
Okay, well, hold that thought, because I do want to get to that, and I want to talk a little bit about your book, too.
Oh, okay.
And talk about the work that you're doing these days that involves suicide prevention. I want to take a quick break. We're talking with actress Mariette Hartley here on CJD. 7900-991 is the number to call. This is Montreal's News Talk leader, CJD 800.
Now, more of Holder Tonight with Peter Anthony Holder on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJAD 800. To speak to Peter, call 790-0991, Star Talk, or 1-800-491-CJAD.
Peter Anthony Holder here with you on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJD 800. We are talking with actress Mariette Hartley. She is also the author of her autobiography, Breaking the Silence, here on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJD 800. And Mariette, we were just about to talk a little bit about some of the sad situations that have taken place in your life. I understand that your father committed suicide. I believe an uncle committed suicide as well?
Yes.
And
right.
And your mother attempted
several times, yeah.
Suicide.
And then I lost a cousin about 4 or 5 years ago. I think at least two of these people were bipolar. And, of course, in the days that my father was struggling with his alcoholism and his bipolar disorder, and I do believe that many people drink just to balance themselves. You know, and of course, and drinking is not the, not the same kind of medication as something like lithium or Depakote or some of the mood stabilizers. It doesn't work the same way, and alcohol can really be extremely destructive to mentally ill people. And when you're the adult child of two alcoholics who are also mentally ill, you know, your mission, should you choose to accept it, and often you don't have much choice, is to defend against their defense against mental illness. So you live in a household where nothing is talked about, where, you know, silence is somehow worshipped, and it was like a death house. I mean, I can't even begin to describe what it was like when we all lived. We came out here to live, to help Dad. Dad was going to help me with the divorce, and turned out to be not much help, but it was a rough time. And this was what happened to me, and one of the reasons why I shout it from the rooftops now, because I believe that we as a country need to be educated, that, you know, we as insurance companies, we as, you know, as health providers. I mean, my daughter today, with all of the work I do in mental health, cannot get insurance. It's unbelievable. It's so frightening to me that people who are medicated correctly, who have very, very little danger of high risk of going into hospitals, are not permitted insurance. That's a whole other story. But one of the reasons that I shout it from the hilltops now is that I do believe we need education about, all kinds of mental illness. I don't believe that it should be stigmatized. You know, we're all trained, many of us, I certainly was, to, you know, pull myself up by my own bootstraps and not tell family secrets. And I was sworn to secrecy about my dad's suicide for about 35 years until I did a movie of the week. And this is where my life gets so kind of mystical, because it was about a woman whose son had committed suicide, played by Chad Lowe. And it's a very good movie of the week. And I finally met other survivors. I had never even known in my life that there were other survivors. I had no idea. And I spoke to them and talked to them, and their experiences were exactly the same. They held their son. They held their son. They cleaned up after him. They, oh my God, all of the things that we do in order just to live through it. And it's not anything I would wish on anybody. At the age of 23, I came home from the hospital and cleaned up after my father. So I was definitely post-traumatic stress. I was struggling with that syndrome for years and years and years, and didn't know anything about it. The only thing that I am grateful for the Vietnam War for is because suicide survivors are very much like Vietnam vets. I mean, we are a part of a war that we didn't want anything to do with, didn't really create, or and then saw atrocities, even imagined atrocities, but real, many of us experienced real atrocities. We found our loved ones. And then you come back to society and you try to talk about it, and nobody wants to hear it. Get over it. And we end up silenced and very ill, as many Vietnam vets have.
Growing up in a household with that kind of turmoil in it, was acting for you an outlet to escape that?
Yeah, I think it was such a gift because I felt so safe on stage. I felt so safe in the darkness for some odd reason because many people are watching you, but that was not the consciousness I had. The consciousness I had was that, oh my God, I'm among kids that I just love. They're as crazy as I am, and you know, and we're doing creative, wonderful, wonderful theater. I mean, it was a highly creative community. So in that sense, I think it was. It ultimately became its own kind of hell because I had to work, and because Dad shot himself pretty much in front of us, I did nothing but Westerns at that point. And I was crawling in fetal positions and not talking to anybody about it because I didn't think talking would help. I mean, I had been raised feeling that talking wouldn't help. And my real healing began when I began speaking to other survivors. And these people on the movie, you know, the advisor said, you must be a part of this community. Please, would you lend your name? Would you speak out about this? And I said, over my dead body. And I really believe that's what would happen. I really believe somehow I would be sucked into the vortex of this kind of illness. And exactly the opposite has happened. And I speak to survivors pretty much on a daily basis.
And that's part of your job as the national spokesperson for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention?
No, it's just part of my job as a human being. Mm-hmm. And somebody who knows the journey as well as anybody else. I mean, I've been traveling this road for 40 years. And I do groups. I do an 8-week group through D.D. Hirsch, the D.D. Hirsch Mental Health Clinic, which is down here. I just spoke for them on Saturday. I do as much as I can to calm or, what is the word, to make especially new survivors' journeys as, if there's such a way, you know, as easy as it, but certainly for them to know that they're not alone and that they will walk through it with help, that they must call us, that they must reach out. And it's a pretty amazing program. And there are programs like that all over the country now. And the AFSP, which is an organization that we co-founded when I was in the morning program, group of suicidologists came to me and said, would you be a part of this group? And I said yes, and you know, a handful of people in my apartment, and we now have 52 chapters all over the country and have raised millions of dollars for research and education. And one of the things that we do is we have a database so that if someone, for example, has committed suicide, you can call the database and get a group that is hopefully near you, which is a wonderful service for people. And I would recommend if anybody's going through this now, and I hope not, but I'm sure there are people listening who are.
Well, I don't know if you're aware of the fact, Quebec has 1,500 suicides a year. It's the highest rate in Canada, and when it comes to suicide, the Jacques Cartier Bridge here in Montreal is second only to the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco.
Oh, God bless all of your heart. I just...
Oh. And another statistic here in the Quebec area is, trying to find it here, I had jotted it down, the number of deaths, it's the leading cause of death for Quebec men between the ages of 15 and 39.
15 and 39, isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
You would think that it would be so much older.
Yeah, so...
Well, what's going on? I mean, what's going on? It's, and it's certainly the third highest, you know, cause of death here in the United States. People think it's, you know, it's unbelievable.
Do you find because you talk about the stigma and people not wanting to talk about it or acknowledge that there's something that there's this problem in their family? Being an actress, and having had this problem in your family, especially the kind of career you had where you've had a lot of light, fun characters that you've played, when people meet you, you always have to be the happy Marriott Hartley.
Oh, you know, I'm so integrated now. You know, I've had so much therapy and so much help and so many friends, and I'm so loved just for who I am that I don't feel I have to put anything on.
Mm-hmm.
I do love to laugh. I find laughing, and I love the spontaneity of very odd things happening. So I have a raunchy sense of humor. And I, even in the groups, by the way, I mean, I will be the first person to try laughter in a group, because I feel that it is the most healing thing. That and hugs.
Absolutely.
Besides people talking about their stories, it's like being in a 12-step program. The strength is self-revelation. And the strongest words you can say are, me too. The strongest action can be a Kleenex being handed to you. I mean, it's amazing what kind of healing there is out there if we dare take the first step.
Marriott, it's been a pleasure having you on the program this evening.
Bless your heart, Peter. Anytime, you know, I just loved this, and I love Canada. I did a wonderful film up there with Alan Arkin years and years ago, which I just love. I had the best time. And Montreal is very special in my heart because of Leonard Cohen and Irving Layton. So
yes.
Some of the best, greatest people come from there.
And speaking as a person who I said earlier, first discovered Marriott Hartley when I was just past puberty and you had two navels. I thank you very, very much for being on the program. I enjoyed watching all the work you've done since Genesis all the way through your career, and continued success with what you do, and hope to see a lot more of you on Law & Order, among other things.
Oh, that would be so great. Thank you so much, Peter.
Thank you for being on the program with us.
God bless.